This is the reading for August 12th. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. These are the words of the teacher, a son of David, king in Jerusalem. The teacher says, useless, useless, completely useless. Everything is useless. What do people really gain from all the hard work they do here on earth? People live and people die, but the earth continues forever. The sun rises, the sun sets, and then it hurries back to where it rises again. The wind blows to the south, it blows to the north. It blows from one direction and then another. Then it turns around and repeats the same pattern, going nowhere. All the rivers flow to the sea, but the sea never becomes full. Everything is boring, so boring that you don't even want to talk about it. Words come again and again to our ears, but we never hear enough, nor can we ever really see all we want to see. All things continue the way they have been since the beginning. What has happened will happen again. There is nothing new here on earth. Someone might say, look, this is new, but really it has always been here. It was here before we were. People don't remember what happened long ago, and in the future people will not remember what happens now. Even later, other people will not remember what was done before them. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I decided to use my wisdom to learn about everything that happens on earth. I learned that God has given us terrible things to face. I looked at everything done on earth and saw that it is all useless, like chasing the wind. If something is crooked, you can't make it straight. If something is missing, you can't say it is there. I said to myself, I have become very wise and am now wiser than anyone who ruled Jerusalem before me. I know what wisdom and knowledge really are. So I decided to find out about wisdom and knowledge and also about foolish thinking. But this turned out to be like chasing the wind. With much wisdom comes much disappointment. The person who gains more knowledge also gains more sorrow. Isaiah chapter 9. But suddenly there will be no more gloom for the land that suffered. In the past, God made the lands of Zebulun and Naphtali hang their heads in shame. But in the future, those lands will be made great. They will stretch from the road along the Mediterranean Sea to the land beyond the Jordan River and north to Galilee, the land of people who are not Israelites. Before, those people lived in darkness, but now they have seen a great light. They lived in a dark land, but a light has shined on them. God, you have caused the nation to grow and made the people happy, and they have shown their happiness to you like the joy during harvest time, like the joy of people taking what they have won in war. Like the time you defeated Midian, you have taken away their heavy load and the heavy pole from their backs and the rod the enemy used to punish them. Every boot that marched in battle and every uniform stained with blood has been thrown into the fire. A child has been born to us. God has given a son to us. He will be responsible for leading the people. His name will be Wonderful, Counselor, Powerful God. Father who lives forever, Prince of Peace, power and peace will be in his kingdom and will continue to grow forever. He will rule as king on David's throne and over David's kingdom. He will make it strong by ruling with justice and goodness from now on and forever. The Lord All-Powerful will do this because of his strong love for his people. The Lord sent a message against the people of Jacob. It says that God will judge Israel. Then everyone in Israel, even the leaders in Samaria, will know that God has sent it. Those people are proud and brag by saying, "These bricks have fallen, but we will build again with cut stones. These small trees have been chopped down, but we will put great cedars there." But the Lord has brought the enemies of Rezin against them. He has stirred up their enemies against them. The Arameans came from the east and the Philistines from the west, and they ate up Israel with their armies. But the Lord was still angry. His hand was still raised to punish the people. But the people did not return to the one who had struck them. They did not follow the Lord All-Powerful. So the Lord cut off Israel's head and tail, taking away both the branch and stalk in one day. The older leaders and important men were the head, and the prophets who speak lies were the tail. Those who led the people led them in the wrong direction, and those who followed them were destroyed. So the Lord is not happy with the young people, nor will he show mercy to the orphans and widows. All the people are separated from God and are very evil. They all speak lies. But the Lord is still angry. His hand is still raised to strike down the people. Evil is like a small fire. First, it burns weeds and thorns. Next, it burns the larger bushes in the forest, and they all go up in a column of smoke. The Lord, all-powerful, is angry, so the land will be burned. The people are like fuel for the fire. No one will try to save his brother or sister. People will grab something on the right, but they will still be hungry. They will eat something on the left, but they will not be filled. Then they will each turn and eat their own children. The people of Manasseh will fight against the people of Ephraim, and Ephraim will fight against Manasseh. Then both of them will turn against Judah, but the Lord is still angry. His hand is still raised to strike down the people. Isaiah chapter 10. How terrible it will be for those who make unfair laws and those who write laws that make life hard for people. They are not fair to the poor, and they rob my people of their rights. They allow people to steal from widows and to take from orphans what really belongs to them. How will you explain the things you have done? What will you do when your destruction comes from far away? Where will you run for help? Where will you hide your riches then? You will have to bow down among the captives or fall down among the dead bodies. But the Lord is still angry. His hand is still raised to strike down the people. God says, how terrible it will be for the king of Assyria. I use him like a rod to show my anger. In anger, I use Assyria like a club. I send it to fight against a nation that is separated from God. I am angry with those people, so I command Assyria to fight against them, to take their wealth from them, to trample them down like dirt in the streets. But Assyria's king doesn't understand that I am using him. He doesn't know he is a tool for me. He only wants to destroy other people and to defeat many nations. The king of Assyria says to himself, all of my commanders are like kings. The city Calno is like the city Carchemish. The city Hamath is like the city Arpad. The city Samaria is like the city Damascus. I defeated those kingdoms that worship idols, and those idols were more than the idols of Jerusalem and Samaria. As I defeated Samaria and her idols, I will also defeat Jerusalem and her idols. When the Lord finishes doing what he planned to Mount Zion and Jerusalem, he will punish Assyria. The king of Assyria is very proud, and his pride has made him do these evil things, so God will punish him. The king of Assyria says this, by my own power I have done these things. By my wisdom I have defeated many nations. I have taken their wealth, and like a mighty one I have taken their people. I have taken the riches of all these people like a person reaching into a bird's nest. I have taken these nations like a person taking eggs. Not one raised a hand or opened its mouth to stop me. An axe is not better than the person who swings it. A saw is not better than the one who uses it. A stick cannot control the person who picks it up. A club cannot pick up the person. So the Lord God All-Powerful will send a terrible disease upon Assyria's soldiers. The strength of Assyria will be burned up like a fire burning until everything is gone. God, the light of Israel, will be like a fire. The Holy One will be like a flame. He will be like a fire that suddenly burns the weeds and thorns. The fire burns away the great trees and rich farmlands, destroying everything. It will be like a sick person who wastes away. The trees left standing will be so few that even a child could count them. At that time, some people will be left alive in Israel from the family of Jacob. They will not continue to depend on the person who defeated them. They will learn truly to depend on the Lord, the Holy One of Israel. Those who are left alive in Jacob's family will again follow the powerful God. Israel, your people are many, like the grains of sand by the sea, but only a few of them will be left alive to return to the Lord. God has announced that he will destroy the land completely and fairly. The Lord God All-Powerful will certainly destroy this land as he has announced. This is what the Lord God All-Powerful says. My people living in Jerusalem, don't be afraid of the Assyrians who beat you with a rod and raise a stick against you as Egypt did. After a short time, my anger against you will stop, and then I will turn my anger to destroying them. Then the Lord All-Powerful will beat the Assyrians with a whip as he defeated Midian at the rock of Oreb. He will raise his stick over the waters as he did in Egypt. Then the troubles that Assyria puts on you will be removed, and the load they make you carry will be taken away. The army of Assyria will enter near Aiath. Its soldiers will walk through Migron. They will store their food in Michmash. The army will go over the pass. The soldiers will sleep at Geba. The people of Ramah will be afraid, and the people at Gibeah of Saul will run away. Cry out, Beth-Galim. Lasha, listen. Poor Anathoth. The people of Madmanah are running away. The people of Gabim are hiding. This day the army will stop at Nob. They will shake their fist at Mount Zion, at the hill of Jerusalem. Watch, the Lord God all-powerful with his great power will chop them down like a great tree. Those who are great will be cut down. Those who are important will fall to the ground. He will cut them down as a forest is cut down with an axe, and the great trees of Lebanon will fall by the power of the Mighty One.
Chapter 7.
Now, concerning the things that you wrote about, it's good for men not to get married. But in order to avoid sexual sins, each man should have his own wife, and each woman should have her own husband. Husbands and wives should satisfy each other's sexual needs. A wife doesn't have authority over her own body, but her husband does. In the same way, a husband doesn't have authority over his own body, but his wife does. Don't withhold yourselves from each other unless you agree to do so for a set time to devote yourselves to prayer. Then you should get back together, so that Satan doesn't use your lack of self-control to tempt you. What I've just said is not meant as a command, but as a suggestion. I would like everyone to be like me. However, each person has a special gift from God, and these gifts vary from person to person. I say to those who are not married, especially to widows, it is good for you to stay single like me. However, if you cannot control your desires, you should get married. It is better for you to marry than to burn with sexual desire.
I pass this command along. Not really I, but the Lord. A wife shouldn't leave her husband. If she does, she should stay single or make up with her husband. Likewise, a husband should not divorce his wife.
I, not the Lord, say to the rest of you, if any Christian man is married to a woman who is an unbeliever and she is willing to live with him, he should not divorce her. If any Christian woman is married to a man who is an unbeliever, and he is willing to live with her, she should not divorce her husband. Actually, the unbelieving husband is made holy because of his wife, and an unbelieving wife is made holy because of her husband. Otherwise, their children would be unacceptable to God, but now they are acceptable to him. But if the unbelieving partners leave, let them go. Under these circumstances, a Christian man or Christian woman is not bound by a marriage vow. God has called you to live in peace. How do you as a wife know whether you will save your husband? How do you as a husband know whether you will save your wife? Everyone should live the life that the Lord gave him when God called him. This is the guideline I use in every church. Any man who's already circumcised when he was called to be a Christian shouldn't undo his circumcision. Any man who was uncircumcised when he was called to be a Christian shouldn't get circumcised. Circumcision is nothing, and the lack of it is nothing. But keeping what God commands is everything. All people should stay as they were when they were called. Were you a slave when you were called? That shouldn't bother you. However, if you have a chance to become free, take it. If the Lord called you when you were a slave, you are the Lord's free person. In the same way, if you were free when you were called, you are Christ's slave. You were bought for a price. Don't become anyone's slaves. Brothers and sisters, you should remain in whatever circumstances you were in when God called you. God is with you in those circumstances. Concerning virgins, even though I don't have any command from the Lord, I'll give you my opinion. I'm a person to whom the Lord has shown mercy, so I can be trusted. Because of the present crisis, I believe it is good for people to remain as they are. Do you have a wife? Don't seek a divorce. Are you divorced from your wife? Don't look for another one. But if you do get married, you have not sinned. If a virgin gets married, she has not sinned. However, these people will have trouble, and I would like to spare them from that. This is what I mean, brothers and sisters. The time has been shortened. While it lasts, those who are married should live as though they were not. Those who have eyes filled with tears should live as though they have no sorrow. Those who are happy should live as though there was nothing to be happy about. Those who buy something should live as though they didn't own it. Those who use the things in this world should do so, but not depend on them. It is clear that this world, in its present form, is passing away. So, I don't want you to have any concerns. An unmarried man is concerned about the things of the Lord. That is, about how he can please the Lord. But the married man is concerned about earthly things. That is, about how he can please his wife. His attention is divided. An unmarried woman or a virgin is concerned about the Lord's things, so that she may be holy in body and in spirit. But the married woman is concerned about earthly things. That is, about how she can please her husband. I'm saying this for your benefit, not to restrict you. I'm showing you how to live a noble life of devotion to the Lord without being distracted by other things. No father would want to do the wrong thing when his virgin daughter's old enough to get married. If she wants to get married, he isn't sinning by letting her get married. However, a father may have come to a decision about his daughter. If his decision is to keep her at home because she doesn't want to get married, that's fine. So it's fine for a father to give his daughter in marriage. But the father who doesn't give his daughter in marriage does even better.
A married woman must remain with her husband as long as he lives. If her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but only if the man is a Christian. However, she will be more blessed if she stays as she is. That is my opinion, and I think that I, too, have God's Spirit.